Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Information Technology. Today is May 19. We're starting out with a work session, opening a work session, Department of Human Services, Oregon Health Authority, at least three separate items. Would you like to describe them to us one at a time, or how do you want to do that?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. Certainly, at a high level, you've already described the purpose of the work session. As per the approach we took in a previous hearing, Bob Cummings and I, on behalf of the legislature, have split the caseload, and the Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority are his agencies, and so we'd like to kind of shift places here.
All right.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cummings, I assume you will be giving a sort of a preliminary description of the work before we hear from anyone else.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Cummings. Representative, yes. Today we're here for three POP packages from DHS and OHA. The first one, and I'll just give a brief overview because the presentation from DHS already has the same sorts of stuff in it, is a POP package. The first one is non-MAGI, and the agency's requested $7.5 million, a 90-10 split with the feds. The total maximum cost of this thing long-term could be as much as $50, $75 million, but they're primarily asking for planning money at this particular time. The purpose is to replace the mostly manual processes they use now to determine eligibility, and the duration is 2015-16, and they're in the pre-stage gate one level of the joint state CIO LFO stage gate review process.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kristen Deuce. I am the Chief Information Officer for the Oregon Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority. With me here today is my business partner, Sarah Meller from the Department of Human Services. And we're here to talk to you about three policy option packages, as Mr. Cummings described. The first is an eligibility system for non-MAGI eligibility determination. The second that we're going to talk to you about is a project that is for tracking statewide adult abuse. And the third project is what we call REAL-D, and that is for tracking race, ethnicity, language, and disability data elements. So I'm going to turn this over to Sarah, who is going to talk about each of the projects in a little bit more detail.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Meller. I am the Chief Operating Officer for Technology for the Department of Human Services. The first package that Mr. Cummings described is Policy Option Package 103 in the department's budget. To set some acronyms at ease and generally orient the committee, there are roughly two kinds of Medicaid services, right? There is income-based Medicaid, which we call MAGI, Modified Adjusted Gross Income. That eligibility system project is currently underway and is the project that will transfer the eligibility system from the state of Kentucky that the Oregon Health Authority is currently undertaking. And I actually am the project director for that project on a job rotation with OHA. But the Department of Human Services does eligibility determination for non-income related Medicaid programs. So we call those non-MAGI Medicaid. And, you know, in the suite of social service eligibility programs, Medicaid is funded by our partners at the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, and they have made what we call 90-10 money available, so enhanced funding for eligibility systems. So when the Oregon Health Authority successfully completes its MAGI Medicaid system transfer project, The Department of Human Services wants to take advantage of that 90-10 money for eligibility systems and is proposing to begin planning work to prepare for the implementation of a non-MAGI eligibility determination system. This policy option package was inserted at the governor's budget level, and the detail that Mr. Cummings wrote about in his write-up relative to this policy option package was based on our original thinking at governor's budget, which had us undertaking a two-year planning effort to do this work. In consultation with our federal funding partners, what became clear to us is that 90-10 enhanced funding for eligibility systems is actually scheduled to sunset on December 31st of 2018. And what that means in real dollars in Oregon is if we don't begin implementation work in the current, by the upcoming biennia, 15-17, we won't have the project done by the time 90-10 money could expire. So what could be instead of a $5 to $7.5 million general fund investment, if it's not eligible for 90-10 money, then it's eligible for 50-50 match, which makes an eligibility system project all of a sudden cost $25 million, upwards of $37.5 million of general fund. And so we met in consultation with LFO professional staff, with Office of the State CIO professional staff, and with Chief Fiscal Office staff, and said, we'd like to suggest a modification to our approach, which would accelerate the planning activities and complete the necessary foundational documentation for the joint stage gate review process, but be prepared to come back in February of 2016 with a ask for approval to proceed with implementation work in the 15-17 biennia. And so, to be specific, what we would do in order to accelerate that work, we would look at candidate systems from other states as potential transfers. It's the department's belief that transferring a system that already does this work in another place is lower risk than building a new one from scratch just for our needs. Pardon me. We will engage a third-party quality assurance firm during the planning period to make sure that we're defining requirements at an appropriate level of depth and producing appropriately detailed foundational documents in order to prepare for implementation. We'll complete a business case that includes an alternative analysis that provides the legislature multiple options to choose from and makes recommendations, you know, makes a request for a stage gate endorsement. We would propose to return back here in February of 2016 to make, you know, share the recommendations out of the business case and make a request to proceed with implementation. Because the federal funding year is different than the biennial fiscal year, we would proceed with seeking permission from CMS for enhanced funding that we would not certainly spend without legislative expenditure authority, but we would ask for that money as part of a federal fiscal year 16 request. And then, you know, assuming that we got federal funding request and that we got legislative approval from you all in February of 2016, we would then put a RFP on the street for system integrator services, where the intention would be that we would invite firms to prepare a response for us and to suggest a system that would meet our business needs. From the department's perspective, if this planning effort is not funded and we're not able to bring forth a request for implementation in February of 16, the manual process continues. The mainframe support that automates portions of this process, you know, continues, but is at jeopardy of our ability to support on an ongoing technical basis. And then, you know, if 90-10 money goes away in December of 2018 as forecasted, we would be in a situation where the general fund asked to support this effort on a go forward could potentially be much greater if we took the whole 2015 biennia to do the planning work. And so the last slide I have for you on this policy option package shows you the basic timeline with project management book of knowledge phases across the top. Per Mr. Cummings' assessment, we are in, you know, sort of pre-conception. The department has brought back Tricia Baxter, who I think some of you know as the former COO for Aging and People with Disabilities and Developmental Disabilities, to sort of lead this planning effort. She has been doing a scan of states who CMS recommends to us are good candidates for system transfer to identify potential alternatives. And so this lays out for you sort of the rough timeline of how we would proceed, which would have us completing initial business case for Stage Gate 1 endorsement by July of this year, spending the next quarter working on the detailed planning necessary to get Stage Gate 2 endorsement, that between November and February we would begin all the work to define our procurement for system integrator services, make sure that that's reviewed appropriately by our quality assurance vendor, and sets forth the detailed planning required to get a Stage Gate 3 endorsement. We would return here in February asking for permission to proceed, and then would begin an 18-month implementation project with a transition to maintenance and operations. So that's the revised approach. It is distinctly different than the initial approach when the policy option package was authored, and reflects collectively our best thinking and making sure that we're leveraging the maximum federal dollars available at this point. Be happy to take any questions on this package.
I would like to ask the first one.
Sure.
Could you please summarize in a nutshell what it is it's going to do to automate eligibility? And the reason I'm asking is there's a House bill, 2219, that passed the House. It's passed through the Senate committee, and it's just awaiting its third reading now in the Senate. And that bill is instructing DHS to work with Oregon Health Authority and others on a consolidated eligibility process so that people don't have to fill out different forms with the same information over and over and over again. Is there a possibility that the work of this is going to impact or make it easier to accomplish the work of that other bill, should that bill be passed by the Senate?
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, the short answer is yes. It is, in plain English, what an eligibility determination system does is it gathers information from an applicant. It compares that information against eligibility criteria for a program, decides based on the information that is provided whether the applicant is eligible for a particular service and at what level of service they could be eligible for, and then makes an enrollment decision. In this case, for non-MAGI Medicaid, it would interface with the department's MMIS system, which is the claims payment processor for Medicaid. It is possible that the alternatives analysis that we would complete to get Stage Gate endorsement might say that the best strategy is to leverage the system that we're bringing in to do eligibility determination for MAGI Medicaid and make additional enhancements to that system. It is also possible that the analysis we bring forward says that it would make more sense to have a social service eligibility engine that could treat all programs, not just non-MAGI Medicaid. But frankly, the department learned from the, you know, history that we all collectively share by having too big a scope, trying to meet too many business requirements is also a problem from an implementation perspective. So in my mind, this approach is a phased implementation that puts no roadblocks in the way of a consolidated single application for social services, probably enables technology that would allow the automation of that process to be easier, but also doesn't try to eat the whole apple pie at the sacrifice of a single program's ability to be successful in its implementation.
Is it fair to say that this is not just the automating of a form, but it's truly what the words say, it's also automating eligibility, that because the criteria will be loaded in, that the computer, if you will, decides, it is saying, this is a go or a no-go. This person meets these criteria, and it's therefore approved.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, the system will have capacity to do that. It will not do that in all cases. So each of our eligibility programs have particular requirements where we have to check information that an applicant provides to us. So these eligibility systems would gather that information in an electronic way, would feed it into the rules engine. In the case of the MAGI project, which is the frame of reference I have for what this system might do, there are actual programmed interfaces where we go to external data sources and we say, Kristen Deuce is applying for Medicaid. She reports this income. We'll go check that income against another income source. If it matches, the computer continues to process her application without intervention. If it doesn't match, it actually triggers a follow-up task that has to be done by an eligibility worker. So the happy path answer is yes. If you report everything and we can check the things that are required and you are determined eligible, the system will do it start to finish and out comes a notice that says you're eligible. The truth is that eligibility work is super complicated, and the number of things that will go start to finish without human intervention is small, but it is possible in the functionality of the system that would be provided.
Thank you. Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This streamlining or shortening of the process, as has been talked about in this committee before, a lot of systems that we're putting in place take a long time, mm-hmm. for good reasons, possibly, or maybe not. Is this maybe biting off too much? Are you going to be able to get there? What's your take on that?
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, so, you know, my professional assessment, having delivered large-scale IT projects for the state, is that this planning effort is possible. What I appreciate about the joint stage gate process is there are external checks on me, right? You don't have to take my word for it. You have professional staff who check my work. The executive branch has professional staff who will check my work and make sure that the case that we're putting forward actually makes the most sense. So in that kind of environment, yes, I sit here confident and believe that I personally could be responsible for the delivery of an investment decision that you would make. And, you know, I'm willing to commit to personally work to do that. I think additionally, we're saying we'll bring in quality assurance, third-party independent oversight early to make sure that we're operating at an appropriate level of detail. I would expect that, you know, the conversation we'd be having in February of 16 about whether we're ready to proceed will have a lot to do with whether I've delivered a successful system on the other large project I'm doing for you. If we haven't finished that project, perhaps DHS isn't prepared to proceed on, you know, this project. And so, you know, I believe it's an appropriate approach. I have consulted with, you know, your professional staff who I think appreciate the perspective of the approach. And, you know, we will be able to do it if we are in a situation to transfer a system, right? If we can take technology that exists somewhere else, we can make the minimal level of customization to it, you know, that becomes then a risk profile that is possible on this kind of schedule.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. Ms. Miller, how much time and effort have you expended on this policy option package?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Whitsitt, me personally on the analysis to date, I just want to be clear, the department or me personally?
You and your staff.
So I wrote the initial one at governor's budget level in consultation with Kristen and members of the DHS exec team. That was a couple of day effort. The revision time that we have spent adjusting this approach, we have Ms. Baxter back, who I think has logged about 5 weeks of halftime work
The reason I ask is that in the LFO report here, and I quote, it is not clear exactly how the requested planning funds will be spent between now and the 2016 legislative session, or where this detail exists. It is occasionally inconsistent with the proposed 2015-17 set of activities identified above. It is not clear from this rough budget exactly what DH expects to have completed. It is also not clear what the role would be for the state staffing or why a system integrator would be retained between July 1st, 2015 and February 2016 when the proposed high-level overall project schedule above clearly shows the system integrator not being needed until March of 17. It also is not clear what a system integrator would be doing during the high-level planning phase of this proposed project, not exactly that the quality assurance vendor role would be. These questions and disconnects in the material that have been provided to LFO need to be addressed, such as to make it absolutely clear what the proposed $7,500,000 is going to be spent for and why. That is not particularly encouraging.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Whitsitt, I understand your reading of the LFO's recommendation, and I understand why LFO is in a situation to recommend this. We've been very clear. By my own reports, I have not done the foundational documentation necessary to support this approach. You know, in my position as the department's chief operating officer for technology, I believe Director Kelly Seal has asked me to advise on when approaches need to be modified. I sought out a meeting with Mr. Rocco, Mr. Pettit, and Mr. Naughton to talk about this change of approach because there's large fiscal consequence if we proceed as planned. And as a public servant, I believe it's my obligation to raise that fiscal consequence and be responsive to the direction. So when I learned 6 weeks ago that CMS had a sunset date for enhanced funding for eligibility systems, I believed it was my job to raise this issue and provide an alternative for your consideration. You know, I think that further in Mr. Cummings' recommendation, it identifies a number of activities that he would expect that would justify our ability to proceed and would be necessary documentation in order to get your endorsement in February of 16. And on behalf of Director Kelly Seal and the department, I am willing and committed to making sure I will sign up for that to-do list. So that you can be assured if we proceed with an investment request for implementation that you can support that. So you're right. We haven't done all the work that is necessary for you to support an implementation request now, but we think there is fiscal reason why it's important for us to be having this policy conversation today.
Other discussion or questions? Yes, Representative Nierman.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So to follow up on Senator Whitsitt's thing there, is there a way that we can structure this so that it can be done? I mean, I'm sensitive to your point that that you're on a kind of a short timeline, and if you don't act by that timeline, then the price goes up. So is there a way we can structure this and get some of the early planning done without allocating $7.5 million? That seems like a little bit of a heavy lift.
Yeah. Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Nierman, absolutely. Please let me be clear. The department has no intention of spending $7.5 million to do planning between now and February. We built the request for federal fiscal year 15 funds based on a two-year planning project that included outsourcing a bunch of this work to third-party vendor. When we changed this approach, we totally acknowledged that it needed to be repriced, but for the budget process, we all agreed that it was better to leave the request as asked and identified because the feds have already approved that money. If we choose not to use it for planning, like if we can complete the planning exercise with $1 million or $2 million, then the feds will already have pre-approved that money to be set aside for implementation. So by no means should I have left anyone on the committee, and my apologies if I did, that we would expend that whole amount for planning. But we haven't done the repricing activity for what the total body of work would be. The project team that I've put together that I think is necessary to support the planning work costs out at about $600,000 to do work from July 1 to February. There'd be additional expenditures for quality assurance and potentially some planning costs, but we would absolutely work with LFO to make sure that we were building a budget that supported the work that would be scoped and would be fiscally responsible. There's no intention on the department's behalf to spend that full amount. So I think you're going to get what you ask for.
So, and I'm kind of new here, so I'll play the new guy card, although that deck keeps getting thinner.
I know, shorter
and thinner,
and shorter, right?
But we've, with, for instance, like with the DMV, we had a strategy of appropriating the money and then unscheduling it. Would you be comfortable unscheduling, let's say, $6 million of that $7.5 million?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Nierman, I would certainly be comfortable, and in fact, I think your professional staff recommendation includes an unscheduling of most of it and a checkpoint along the way that we're making substantial progress on a plan that we propose and everyone agrees to. Okay. So the department has no issues with that.
Mr. Cummings, what is LFO's recommendation?
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. The what Sarah Miller has communicated here is pretty accurate. Things have changed very quickly. The reason the LFO has made the recommendation, which I'm going to read to you in a moment here briefly, is that we see a possible loss of $20 to $30 million in federal funds if we do not go forward with this recommendation. The concern that we have, I have, is that I don't know that this particular recommendation or path is necessarily better than the previous one, because that analysis hasn't been done. But I've worked sufficiently with Sarah Miller over the last couple of years, particularly on the Cover Oregon and Magi stuff, to know that she does stuff by the numbers. And so the LFO has recommended, we didn't specifically unschedule on this one because, as Ms. Miller has mentioned, we have built in a recommendation that is an incremental conditional approval, and we've asked for, as we do on all major projects, a controlled funding release plan, which gives tremendous flexibility to both the executive branch and the legislature to unschedule funds throughout the life of a project. We were concerned that we don't know exactly how much planning money was to be spent. They didn't know yet because they haven't defined it. They've started to appear. And I believe that if the steps are that are followed in our recommendation, that we'll minimize our risk to go forward. So with that said, I'll briefly tell you what our recommendation is. In order to provide DHS with maximum flexibility for getting work on 103, POP 103, LFO recommends incremental conditional approval of POP package 103, assuming the funding and personnel resources are made available to DHS within the 2015-17 adopted budget. As I said, we're not recommending unscheduling at this time, but certainly would be flexible if that's what the committee prefers, because we feel that the funding release plan that we're asking to be put together will build that in. As I said, I've had an extremely good track record personally working with Sarah Miller on these things, and she does what she says she's going to do. So that said, if there were 11 specific recommendations from the LFO, I'll just mention three of the most important ones. Immediately develop the following materials for the proposed planning effort. And what we're doing is we're defining what's the planning going to be done between now and next February. What are the deliverables? How much is it going to cost? What are we going to get for our money? The second thing is finalize a control funding release plan. And that basically takes the stage gate into account, and we break things out so that we can see exactly when we can unschedule money and also when they need money. We have to be careful in these unscheduling things, that if we unschedule and don't provide the proper timing for rescheduling, then we can put the agencies in a position where they run out of money before we can get back to another session or e-board or whatever. And so we just need to be careful on that. And then, of course, we need to, as I said, we need to know exactly what we're going to get by February the 16th. And so there are 11 recommendations, but those are the key ones to make up for a shortfall of planning at this particular point. And it's not unusual on these large things like this to have things change at the last minute. And I'm not convinced that what they're recommending is not the right thing to do in any way, shape, or form, but they've got to do the analysis to validate that. So that's why we made the recommendation that we did.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, we've seen all 11, and Brownie Scout promise we will deliver all 11.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I move that we accept the LFO recommendations and transmit the findings to the Human Services Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
A motion has been made. Is there discussion of this motion?
Yeah, I will. So I just, again, I feel kind of bad being the new guy here. I feel like I should trust Mr. Cummings and Ms. Miller. I think I'm going to be a no on this just because I think that we ought to be able to commit to a budget and commit to a schedule. And so I think even at a high level, so and we talk about like the e-board not necessarily meeting for several months or something, that's significant. But I think there should be a way to work around that. So I'm kind of disappointed that that we can't just commit to that. So I'll probably be a no vote on this.
Thank you. Committee will be at ease for just a minute. Thank you. We are no longer at ease. We're ready to continue. A motion has been made. We've had some discussion. All those opposed? There's one. And Senator Whitsitt as well. Motion passes. Next project.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. The next topic, POP package, is POP 107, and it has to do with a statewide adult abuse data and report writing system. And the budget request at a high level is approximately $5.6 million. Approximately $334,221 has been spent on ongoing planning of the original $500,000 that was originally allocated to the project. The purpose of this POP is to move from phase one to phase two. The duration of it is to be determined depending upon the solution that's selected. And at this particular point, the project team is in between stage gate two and three, but that may be adjusted depending upon what comes from the work that they're doing.
Co-Chairs Nathanson, members of the committee, I will start by acknowledging Senator Whitsitt's comments from before, because those comments will probably apply to this policy option package as well. The department finds itself in a unique position relative to this policy option package. You all authorized the department to spend $500,000 in planning effort to identify a business case and recommended alternative for a statewide adult abuse reporting data and report writing system. You funded that out of a special purpose appropriation for seniors, and you gave us a budget note asking us to have the business case completed by a third party. The business need, separate from the business case, for this system, I think, is well known to all of you as we've been providing updates. The department has a office we call OAPI, Office of Adult Abuse Protection and Information. It is a shared service for Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority, and provides protective information about people who are at risk to having advantage taken of them. That adult abuse reporting process right now is highly intensive. There are like 9 individual systems, different systems for different programs. It's a highly manual process that makes statewide viewing of any kind of data very complicated and nearly impossible. It takes hours and hours and hours to aggregate disparate data across multiple data sources to give you any view into trends relative to protection of adults. It's inefficient paper processing, and because we don't have automation, lots of time the documentation lags the episodes, and so it does not give you any indication of real-time information. So here's the problem. You gave us planning money. We hired a third-party contractor. The third-party contractor completed a business case, and frankly, the recommendation out of the business case is an alternative that Ms. Deuce and I are not prepared to support yet. So the business case drew the conclusion that a custom application is the right answer to meet the business need here. And it estimated that the cost of that custom application, development, initial implementation, and 2 years of support would be in the neighborhood of $5 million. When Kristen and I got a copy of the business case and consulted with the steering committee, we raised really fundamental questions about the analysis, right? So it's our job to review business cases before they're submitted in the joint LFO state CIO's office stage gate process. And it didn't pass our collective analysis sniff test in terms of sufficient. I can't tell you here today that I'm not going to be back and tell you that custom application is the right answer in the future. What I can tell you is that the analysis that we've done to date, I don't think adequately considers all of the alternatives sufficiently to support that recommendation. So this POP was originally authored to proceed with implementation here because we were supposed to come back, have done the business case, gotten the stage gate endorsement, and been prepared to move forward. And the department is unwilling to submit the business case as it currently exists to the oversight process. I think, frankly, you should be proud of us for making that decision and saying that additional analysis is necessary because we have a real consideration that other, we think, potentially lower risk alternatives have not yet been fully vetted. So the department proposes a modified approach, which we have not done extensive documentation of, that would put together a cross-programmatic team. So folks from our business program area, folks from Kristen's organization inside of OIS, folks from the Department of Human Services IT Business Support organization, which sort of sits between program and OIS. We would put together a team of folks whose job it would be to go site visit two or three states and look at their systems as potential candidates for transfer. We think it's important for state employees to engage not just with vendors who will tell you all the glory of what their system can do as a transfer system approach, but instead go talk to people who've actually implemented the system, who are currently using systems, and decide whether a system can be minorly modified to meet the business need of the agency or not. And so the revised approach has about half of the time between now and February 16 set up for this team to visit two or three states and consider in a greater level of detail the potential to transfer those. If we decide after those three site visits that there is really no candidate for a transfer system, we have additional planning work to be done before we could support a custom application development recommendation. And so we would spend the remainder of the time between those site visits and February of 16 building out an appropriate project plan, which is why I took off the dates in the schedule of events and marked them as TBD, because until we decide an approach, I can't even give you a ballpark about what the right answer is. And so this project proposes to revise its business case and alternatives analysis, complete the necessary stage gate documentation after additional planning work has been done, and return in February 16 with recommendation for how to proceed with implementation and ask for your funding support at that time.
You mentioned a steering committee.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a departmental steering committee or a steering committee of stakeholders or a combination?
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, the formal steering committee for the project has all department representatives on, but Marie Cervantes, who is the director of the Office of Adult Abuse, I'm so sorry, I have not learned all the new acronyms at DHS, OAPI, has an external stakeholder advisory group who I think is advising generally on the needs from a protection of adults perspective that we would need to see out of a reporting system, but they don't sit in an actual formal governing capacity. The governing body for the project is internal to the agency.
There's an Office of Long-Term Care Ombudsman,
mm-hmm.
which you know about.
I do.
I have heard recently, not from that office, but from others, that there is some concern that certain abuses are not being reported for investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be a staffing issue. It may be a policy and process issue on which sorts of things should be reported to which agency. At some point, you pick up the phone and call 911.
Yes.
At other times, you report to a licensing or certifying office, or you report to someone else. But there has been some indication to me that some abuse is not being reported at all.
Mm-hmm.
Is the long-term care ombudsman office involved on occasion, asking them for their advice or input on what might be included? Part of my question is, at what point do we make sure that instead of just assigning something for ourselves, we realize this is for Oregonians on behalf of Oregonians, and sometimes another few eyes on the project is not a bad idea.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, the direct answer is I'm not sure. I'd be happy to take the request back for follow-up. I think generally I can represent on behalf of the department that we are working really hard to partner with stakeholders who would be impacted and believe in the benefit of leveraging investment for lots of programs benefit. Part of the reason why Kristen and I put a screeching halt to custom application development is because at the highest level, it doesn't make sense to us that the only way we could solve this problem is to build something from scratch. So I'll take your request back and make sure. I don't think philosophically the department has any issue with consulting with the office if we aren't currently, but I'm also not the program expert, and so I need to carry that one back.
Thank you. Senator Whitson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we throw a lot of big numbers around with IT, and kind of put it in perspective a little bit. $1 million would keep about 600 people in their homes and support them under the Oregon Project Independence. So we have a $500,000 contract that it's sort of an, oh, whoops, we didn't get what we expected. Well, why didn't we get what we expected? That's the equivalent of about 300 people for a year in their homes with OPI. Is it all right to simply make a contract with a company to provide something and then dislike what they provided and pay them anyway? I mean, I don't. This is just one small piece of what we're talking about here. You know, I mean, when you start talking $50 million, you're talking a lot of OPI, you know, just as a measuring stick. So I'm wondering if we ought to give some thought to the numbers we're pushing around here and what, not necessarily just on this project, but what we could be doing with that for the people as opposed to investing it in planning.
Co-Chair Nathanson, may I respond?
Certainly.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Whitsitt, I share your concern, and I want you to know how seriously the department takes it relative to this effort. I think the creation of my position as the Chief Operating Officer for Technology and my director's responsibility and belief that I will have vendor management responsibility for outsourced technology work in the future begets that very question. And so, you know, certainly I don't presume to weigh in on the larger policy question that you answer, but, you know, certainly I think you can expect from this department as we come back in the interim and report to you and report in February and in the next legislative session, you will not hear us make statements like that because it's part of my long-term employment responsibility to make sure that the department gets appropriate value from its technology vendors in the future.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question is, could you have, within your department, done this analysis on your own without contracting out to the outside vendor? And do you think it would have come up with a better answer?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Senator Riley, you know, it's an interesting question. I get to play now, my turn, Representative, the new kid card at the Department of Human Services, right? I have officially been employed there since January 1st. I think Kristen has been employed at the Oregon Health Authority and DHS as CIO for slightly more, 90 days more than me. There is no doubt in my mind when the department got the budget note to ask for this analysis to be completed by a third-party vendor, there was reason for that. And frankly, when we met last week with professional staff, we were all trying to think back and remember what exactly the reason was. You know, if I was a speculating kid, the IT resources in Kristen's shop were all focused on Affordable Care Act implementation, and DHS was not receiving very much of its representative total of the shared service of the IT organization. You know, I think her staff were keeping DHS systems afloat, but not doing a bunch of additional analysis for future DHS effort. So if I was guessing, that's why we got the budget note, was the circumstances that were there. Do I believe that it is our department's responsibility to be able to complete a thorough and accurate business case that gives us an analysis that is appropriate for the stage gate process? Yes. Do I think we have capacity development to do in my organization, sort of the shared service place between IT and program and in Kristen's organization? Yes. Do I think we will be able to do them all ever? No. But can I recast history? It's sort of a moot point.
Absolutely.
Sharing my perspective.
Follow up. So I agree. It's moot whether or not, you know, you actually did it because you didn't.
Right.
I guess the question was more about the future than about the past.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in making sure that we don't hire a contractor that we don't trust.
Sure.
That was my point, and I just wanted to put that on the record, basically.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Riley, we agree, we support it, and I think we're looking at ways to increase our internal capacity to complete the analysis better. I mean, I shared with you my perspective that, you know, at least we saw the problem before we handed it to oversight, who pointed it out to us, so we're growing in our own sort of self-awareness. Now it's our job to expect better product from our project teams from the outset.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you. So, to use one of Senator Johnson's favorite terms, don't blame the dead guy. What have you or your staff looked back into how that $500,000 contract was issued and made decisions on how you won't do that again?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Whitsitt, the answer to that is yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Cummings, can you put something on the table for us to discuss? What's the LFO recommendation here?
Co-Chair Nathanson, member of the committee. Based upon the LFO's review of this particular POP package and its background, the LFO recommends incremental conditional approval of Policy Option Package 107, assuming the funding and personnel is made available to DHS within the 2015-17 budget. Specifically, LFO recommends that the proposed funding for any remaining activities be approved, any planning activities be approved. Any remaining expenditure limitation be unscheduled by DAS. And the Department of Health and Human Services will be required to request the OSCIO, the CFO, and LFO approval that a portion of all the remaining unscheduled expenditure limitation be rescheduled. The bottom line is we would recommend that you approve the planning money. You unschedule all the rest of it, and when they come back and show both the CFO, the OSCIO, and LFO that they need the remaining portion for work after the planning, that we can reschedule at that time. Specifically, we further recommend a very similar to the previous POP package, and that is that the DHS develop a plan and schedule for reevaluating the vendor business case and option analysis that recommended a custom solution, basically, is to go back in and redo that and come up with a recommendation that makes better sense for going forward. Then do an estimate for, and then also do an estimate for the continuing planning work that needs to be done between now and next March. And then work with the LFO to get the control and the and CIO's office to finalize a control funding release plan. And then clearly document the plans and related schedule for DHS and following in preparation for asking for the balance of the funding in 2016. The bottom line is we need to clarify where we're at. We need to get a plan for going forward. We need to identify the amount of money we need to go forward. And then we need to identify the different things we're going to put together. And then if we have the control funding release plan, then the department will be in a position where they can come back and ask for additional money through those three entities that we identified.
The department commits to those activities.
Senator Ryland.
So what's the amount of money that we're asking for right now?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Riley, members of the committee. At this particular point, the ask in this particular POP package is $5.7576 million. We have not identified what sub portion of that will be needed for planning. At least we haven't. The LFO hasn't at this point. We need to ask the agency how much they feel they need, and typically we would do that working with the budget analyst, and we would identify that for being put into the budget bill itself. So. At this particular point, we don't know the number until they give us an idea of what they think they need.
Okay. That'll be done in the subsidy committee.
That's correct. Yes.
But the idea is that it's in the budget, but it's all unscheduled. I do think it's unusual to put any amount of money in a budget when we don't even know what we're buying. In a way, it's a placeholder saying we're serious, we are going to fix this problem and have a system that will accomplish these things. Representative Newman.
Thank you. So you're going to visit three states to look at their systems then. Do you know what three states those are?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Newman, no, not yet.
Do you have a timeline for having completed those three visits?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Nierman, yes, the schedule would have 90 days after July 1, we will have completed those visits.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cummins, this ask is for $3.3 million in Q bonds. Why are we bonding this program? What is the term of the bonds? What's the anticipation date of the issuing of the bonds? Perhaps it's a rhetorical question.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, we'd need to get back with you on that. I don't have my budget analyst in here to tell me those exactly what those specifics are.
Co-Chair Nathanson, if I might be responsive to a portion of Senator Whitsitt's question, the department understands that additional planning work is not Q bond financeable, that the additional planning work would be general fund request, and that only at such time that we proposed a alternative that was an implementation project would that investment be eligible for Q bond financing.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I move that we accept the LFO recommendation and transmit our findings to the Human Services Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
The motion has been made. Discussion? All those opposed? Representative Nierman, Senator Whitsitt. Motion passes. Thank you. Next. And I'm passing the gavel. I'm headed to another meeting now.
Thank you.
Yeah, let us know what this package is and we'll go on.
Okay. Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. The third and final package for today is a joint package between DHS and OHA. It's POP 201. This is a revised request from the original ask. It's for $1.466 million. $831,865 general fund for DHS, $634,672 general fund for OHA, plus 3.00 FTEs for DHS, 2.00 FTEs for OHA. The purpose is to improve the alignment with House Bill 2134, 2013, with respect to alignment and getting some uniform standards for collection of real plus D data. The duration at this particular point, this is being proposed as an operational project, so it would not have a duration. The project at this point is in stage gate one, but it would be not applicable if the project is moved from a IT project to an operational one.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, let me first start by defining REAL plus D. So that's an acronym that is, stands for race, ethnicity, and language plus disability status. Mr. Cummings reflected that, again, this is a revised approach, this time on behalf of the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority, that significantly reduces the request to advance this initiative. When the original POP was written for both agencies, it was built on the Oracle framework that we have since made the decision to abandon. It was also largely staff intensive to support complicated technology and advancing the business agenda. I told you when we were here at the department table for phase two that we were reconsidering the approach to leverage investment that we were already making. So now that we've decided to leave the Oracle framework, there is a automated tool solution that's part of the MAGI system transfer project that we think can be leveraged to advance some of this policy agenda. If we take that tool and leverage its investment, we don't need the same level of funding and FTE to support a large-scale system implementation. Secondarily, this revised approach would modify an existing warehouse and allow the data that we gather about a person's race, ethnicity, and language to be put in a place where we could do reporting that identifies populations that might be experiencing health care disparities in treatment by their coordinated care organizations or service disparities in treatment by Department of Services, Department of Human Services social service programs. And so this revised approach actually we think is more in line with the particular budget scenario that we all face. We think that the approach is more reasonable in terms of leveraging existing investment that is being made by federal funding partners in different areas. So we try to solve problems not for individual systems and individual programs, but use a single investment to service multiple answers. The initial implementation, if we take this approach, will actually only deal with race, ethnicity, and language, because federal law prohibits us asking disability status of our clients if we're considering health care coverage. And so we will not be gathering that disability status information in the MAGI system. I understand there's some question by members about whether if we do this project, will it require us to create additional forms for applicants to complete additional information? The answer to that is no. This approach actually leverages gathering of data from the initial MAGI Medicaid application. We added a few data elements to the existing application, and once we have serviced the entire Medicaid-eligible population, we will have those data elements for more than a million Oregonians as the foundation to start. So the department and both agencies now, I speak also on behalf of the Oregon Health Authority for this policy option package, believe this is an approach that helps implement what the legislature asked both agencies to do in the 2013 House Bill 2134 and is cognizant of leveraging investment and not, creating a large number of permanent funded positions. So with that, I'm open for any questions.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you. I wasn't aware that OHA even had an Office of Equity and Inclusion. When was that formed? What is its budget? How many people work for it? And what is its purpose, I guess?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitson, Truthfully, I can't answer any of those questions. I will have to take them back for you. In general, I think the Office of Equity and Inclusion was created when the Oregon Health Authority was created, because trying to make sure that our underserved populations get appropriate access to health care was a high priority of the previous governor in the health care transformation work that was done. And that office is the policy branch that supports and pays attention to those populations and their access to health care services. I can't answer any of the specifics about the office.
Other questions? Okay, I'm going to carry this over until next Thursday, and so I'm going to, as I carry it over, I'm not closing this. I'm just carrying it over until next Thursday, and I think.
Excuse me, Co-Chair Riley. You mean this Thursday?
Yeah.
Okay.
The 21st.
I thought I heard you say next Thursday, but we're talking about the 21st.
Yes, the following perfect. Thursday, the very next one.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you for your opportunity for the time today.
Absolutely, and I think that concludes our business today. So we're closed.